Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to the new episode and yet another brand new season of Injury Time. We've been away for a couple of months now, but we are back as the new season has kicked off. In this episode, we discuss the I-League qualifiers, which is won by Mohammedan Sporting, and what it means for Indian football. And to break it down, we have a friend of the pod, Mr. Pradyum Reddy again. He has personal experience having coached in the second division and knows the pitfalls of the league very well, which has proved to be a proving ground and stepping stones for many a careers in Indian football. So, let's get right to it.
I think you had this thing, right? One time.
Yeah, I did. But it's getting to the point now where I'll need like a serious amount of stuff holding it back. Might have to get dreadlocks and look like that Maldives coach, the Mazia coach.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm in the same boat. I have a small this thing tied at the back. And my parents call me now. And mm-hmm. The first thing they say is, like, trim your beard because it looks ugly and stuff. I keep telling them I have nowhere to go. So I know I dropped the ball a couple of times to get this podcast done.
Sorry, man. It's fair enough. I ended up doing one for Nikhil Sharma. So.
I saw. But fair enough. But anyway, now that you are, we are back properly and going into quarantine and things, I think we
can do a lot. Hey, no, I'm free during quarantine to do as many podcasts as you want. I'm going to try and actually get people to ask me to do some stuff during quarantine, so at least keeps my, just the time flying at least.
Yeah, perfect. So finally, football's back. Yep. Well, football was back. It's no longer there for another month or so. So, second division, did you enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, it was not just from the fact that it was football was back after a long time. There was something to watch in terms of an Indian football context. And also just, there's a lot of players that sort of cropped up that, you know, probably, if you look at it from the way the players' perspective, they thought, instead of sitting around doing nothing, let me go and play for a second division team. So, to get people to notice me. So that was an interesting one from, you know, and from the perspective of looking for talent and suddenly spotting players who you hadn't heard of for a while and you're wondering what they were doing. So that was good.
So who caught your eye?
There's a couple of kids. I mean, I was surprised in terms of just the whole team with Garhwal's performance. I thought there were a lot better than what I expected. A lot of people had probably didn't have much hope for them, and I thought they did particularly well, even though the points don't show it and the results don't show it. They gave some opportunities to a lot of good Indian youngsters, and a few who caught my eye on their team. And I think, again, with Mohammedan and Bhawanipur, it just showed that the experience squads being together and having players who played at this level, that certainly gave those guys a little upper hand, as well as a sort of home advantage. I don't want to give too many names away in terms of who individually caught my eye, but I think in terms of the teams, those are the ones that sort of caught my eye.
Yeah, I mean, even I was surprised. Although Garhwal lost, I think, three of the games, they did look capable of causing some issues. I think they caused some problems for Mohammedan and things like that. So there is something interesting going on in that team.
Absolutely. I think they've got, if they can keep a hold of a lot of those young kids together for another couple of seasons, and you'll see that them doing really well, both as individuals and as a team. And I think, look at the history of the second division, teams that have, at the first attempt, very, very few teams normally go up at the first attempt, and it's so. And if they do, they normally drop back down. If you look at Sikkim United, took many years. Lajong took many years. So did Arimar. So did Ranjit, Royal Windor. All these teams took, it wasn't at their first attempt that they got through. So, you know, it's no surprise there in a way that Mohammedan did get through because they probably got the most experience in the second division.
Now, you have experience being a coach in a team in the second division league. Yeah. And when we have spoken over messages and things, you've always spoken about how difficult it is to make that climb from second division because so many random things are happening, you know, squads are changing and things like that. How mm-hmm. much harder or easier is it in this context, like a burst of, you know, 10 days where everybody's playing every 2 days?
I think the frequency of the schedule, I mean, in that way, it was actually not too bad. They had, a break of 3 days before the games, which is unusual in the second division. Normally in the past, it's always been, you know, two games in a row and, two-day turnaround. I've experienced second division campaigns where the groups are, you know, you're in groups of eight teams or seven teams and you're playing every third day, every second day. So in that regard, it was a little bit easier for these teams. There was less, it was just four games. But given the whole COVID environment and being in quarantines before you go to Calcutta and in Calcutta, all that obviously adds to it. And I think that just meant that it just became a complete sort of crapshoot in a way that who's going to come out on tops. But I think Mohammedan, that experience just showed a little bit and maybe that home advantage. And I think just overall, I think they got their recruitment. They did a very good job with their recruitment. And that helped.
So in this, did you also, I mean, for me, the biggest difference when I look at a team like FCBU, who before going into the tournament, we thought were one of the favorites. Mm-hmm. And or at least most of the people thought they were favorites. For them to, did the lack of a foreign striker, did that show them up in that tournament?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things in terms of FCBs. I mean, we've obviously seen them playing in the BDFA here as well as in their initial second division group stages, you could say. And if you look, if you looked at that team, you wouldn't say they were going to be contenders. I think if you look at the team that they put together for this qualifiers compared to what they were playing in the qualifying rounds earlier in the year, it's completely different teams. I think they made some significant changes, which is why everyone probably thought they're one of the teams that have got genuine chance of going up because some of the names. And I think not only did they miss a trick by not signing three foreigners and he opted for two, you then kind of stuck with a plan A, and that's basically what you're stuck with going into the tournament. And in any second division, historically, if you look at the second division, most of the time there's always been one or two strikers that have been dominant in that phase and helped their teams go on to be successful. So it's a huge gamble to go without a proven goal scorer in such a short format, because, you know, the advantage is you can play badly on a day, but you have, to use an example, Nodafa in your team. Mm. You know, the entire team can play badly, but he just does his thing and he pops up with a goal and you just have to sit back and defend that. And I think their first game against Bhawanipur summed it up. They played all the football. They played all the football. Philip Aja was the difference. And it was just, you know, it was a hopeful long ball for the second goal. He made a goal out of nothing, really. And similarly, in the first one, it was the first goal was a mistake by FCBU. He took a shot, the keeper parried it, and Pankaj Moola taps it in. So, you know, with going with a centre back and a midfielder, really, and Opoku, I think they certainly missed a trick there.
So I did speak to Richard before going into that game, and also in that he wanted to play a certain way. And it looked, for me, it looked like the team was well coached, but the defender Rana Garami did not really impress. The same way, like you said, as an attacker, Azharuddin Malik was not doing much, and the other Ronaldo Oliveira, I think his name is, he was also not doing much. So it felt like the issue was the front end and the back end, and the middle was fine. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, I actually watched a few of their build-up games. They played a couple of warm-up matches in Bangalore before they left. One was against, or both of them were against a team put together with the likes of Sunil Udanta, Suresh, and a couple of other local Bangalore boys who were probably going to be in some I-League and ISL teams. And they lost the first game, I think it was 3-1 or 3-2, and then they won the next game convincingly 5-1. 5-0 or 5-1. And I think even having watched both those games, I just felt, you know, they weren't solid at the back. If you're struggling against, or you're conceding goals against a team, that's not really a team, it's just a bunch of people training in the off-season. Although, you know, Sunil scored one of the goals and there were some top players playing for that team. It felt like they hadn't fixed the issues that they needed to at the back in terms of what we had seen in BDFA and all that. They changed things. And I think what was significant I noticed from them was that they had gone from not so much of a possession-based team in the early rounds, earlier in the year, to a team that could play better football and keep control the tempo of the game. Because I think the old way of playing with a high press strategy and playing at that high tempo would have been very difficult in the weather in Calcutta and with the games coming up thick and fast. So I think it's one of those you live and learn from the lessons, but it's just too short a campaign, so you can't even rectify some of the things and make adjustments. So it could be, you know, but I don't think any team could be better prepared, or you know, you could say they were less prepared or anything because of just the whole way that the situation's been in and around football at the moment.
So having coached teams, successful teams, title winning teams, how different is it to actually start a tournament with a trophy or a promotion at hand, as opposed to ending a year, a season with something to play for? In the mindset is completely different, or is that too much? I mean, am I reading a little too much into that?
Well, in terms of how Mohammedan will approach the I-League, or?
Yeah, because they already won something that they were fighting for in the start of the season. Now, it's with like a month and a half, two, they have to restart all over again.
I mean, I think it definitely gives you confidence, because if you're the team that's won the second division and then goes in to the I-League, and I think just historically as well, teams that have won promotion, you know, in the past when it was two teams that were promoted or sometimes three teams that were promoted, it's very rarely that the champion team got relegated the next year, although promoted teams struggle. So I think it certainly gives you confidence. It gives a little bit of a boost, and typically you retain a lot of those players because you've been successful. So that helps you in terms of you have some kind of team camaraderie, whereas a lot of teams, even in the I-League, might be relatively, you know, it's new teams in terms of 70-80% of the team might be put together just for this season. Because there's a lot of turnover in terms of players and teams. So that might actually serve as an advantage to Mohammedan this year, especially in the first few games, and the fact that they've had an extended preseason of sorts. So you'd expect them to pick up early points this season in the I-League.
And there is also the whole fiasco with Jan Lahr. When he got sacked by Mohammedan, once that happened, I was surprised when it happened. But when I look back, I was like, yeah, this is sort of in keeping with what is expected sometimes.
I mean, I think all of us, obviously the nature of it took everyone by surprise with the whole allegations about things happening behind the scenes, etc. But in terms of with that club, with that kind of behavior, it's almost we've come to expect that as the norm. And bizarrely, it actually, you know, worked to their advantage in terms of, if you look at it, they were poor in the first game. I mean, granted, they missed Willis Plaza, missed a penalty, and he did hit the crossbar as well. And they were lucky to get a wonder goal from Munmun Lagoon at the end. But whoever it was that made the changes for the next game and picked that particular lineup, they did significantly better in terms of the scoreline, obviously scoring four goals. And then that same personnel or management and staff, whoever put together the team that beat Bhawanipur in the crucial game, 2-0, and secured qualification. So you never know what happens behind the scenes at clubs, and you know, there's not a lot of allegations and counter-allegations in terms of what players felt was happening under the former coach and how the management felt under the former coach. But you know, you have to give him some credit. He obviously took the pre-season, took the training and assembled that team along with the management. I mean, I think they were obviously influential in the players that they signed, and they put together a strong unit. So it wouldn't be a Mohammedan sporting season without a coach being sacked and without some controversial circumstances. So, you know, you got the whole package, even though it was a condensed second division season. We got all the usual things that we expect from an Indian second division campaign.
So feel free not to answer this. And I can always edit this out also.
Sure.
Because Marcus wrote a story about some fixing in the Goa League. And I've heard some stuff that happened in the Bangalore leagues. And these guys are alleging that the information was leaked and things like that in the second division. Is this a common thing that happened in Indian football? Or is it just reading too much into it sometimes?
I'll tell you an interesting thing. I was speaking to someone again, in the football industry, who knows a lot about not just Indian football as well as football in Asia. And he recommended that I read this book by this guy called Vincent Raj Perumal, The Kelong Kings. And I haven't managed to get hold of the book yet. It's not available on Amazon. It's available. And anyway, to get to the point, one of the things that he mentions, and this guy is somebody who's been convicted of match fixing at the very, very highest level. These are millions of pounds and dollars, whatever, that they were fixing matches. He said now a lot of it has shifted to smaller leagues because there's too much attention on the big leagues. The players are on astronomical figures, so you're not going to be able to influence players at that level, and you will get reported, and there's too much scrutiny around big leagues. But with everything going digital nowadays and online, you can bet on, you know, a second division game in maybe Bhutan, probably, as well as easily as you can bet on Real Madrid versus Barcelona this weekend. So, especially online, so it doesn't really matter for you which one you bet on, because odds are odds. But I think for the people who are involved in this kind of fixing and all this other stuff, it's obviously a lot easier to fix a game where the players aren't earning astronomical sums, and there's probably not as much scrutiny on those games. It's not televised. It's not has many eyeballs on it. So I wouldn't be surprised, as you know, we've seen it in local league matches. We've heard about it in matches, and you do see some strange things happening and I've seen it in the second division in the past, especially when it came to the end of it, where results don't matter in terms of, you know, who's qualifying from the group and there's no relegation. So you'd see these dead rubbers where some strange things used to happen. So I wouldn't put it past it happening as it said so in that article that Marcus had published.
It's very interesting. The same thing in tennis as well. Most of the spot betting things happen in challenger or the level below, not at the ATP WTA level. I guess it's, like you said, it's just easier with not many people.
Yeah, it's easier, and I think there's just the less eyeballs on it.
Yeah. So coming now into, so every time you qualified from second division, you get to the I-League, the whole purpose was to get to the first division. And now that you have reached I-League, which is no longer the first division, and promotion seems, what, another year away at least, at the very least? So what is the incentive here?
Well, I think if you look at it that way, I think for teams like Mohammedan and other teams, you want to be closer. You need to be in the I-League if you want to aim for that promotion to the top league in a few years' time. Secondly, I think if you're in, I mean, this is obviously talking in pre sort of COVID terms, you'd rather be playing in a league that's longer and televised. It gives you a much better platform for both your club as well as your players, because you've seen now a lot of I-League clubs are quite happy being feeder clubs, to use that term, to some of the ISL teams. The likes of, I think Chennai City FC has made plenty of transfer fees over the last couple of years with players, and most recently Ajit going to Bengaluru. In the past, Lajong's been the one that's been most successful at doing this. So you don't see too many players making that jump from a second division team to an ISL team, so there's not much money in transfer fees or development fees, and now with this training compensation for a second division team. Also because as a second division club, you're not going to pay 12-month salary to your players to keep them on your books in the hope that you sell them on to an ISL team when your league only lasts for probably 2 or 3 months, whereas it's a bit more feasible to do that with an I-League team. So I think, yeah, that's they'd rather be in that position where their players can be showcased. And it works if you flip the argument around the other way too. You can actually attract players now who might decide to take a step down from the ISL, saying, I'm not getting game time in an ISL team. I'd rather play in the I-League, where I'll get noticed and it'll improve my valuation for the next year, or even the national team head coach might take notice of me because I'm playing as a centre-back or a centre-forward, where typically I wouldn't get many minutes in the ISL in those positions. So it can work beneficially for both players as well as clubs.
And you've also been a big proponent of people playing second division and then coming up the ranks. And we've seen examples of Adil Khan, Sandeep Singh, and all those people who have come from I-League 2 and up.
Eugene, loads of players you can fit that. Jackie, Satya, loads. Yeah.
So
you can actually make an entire team of that.
Yeah. So in the same vein, like when you see people like Frankie, who was playing in FCBU before, and other people who have since gone and joined Odisha or Goa or any other team, as a coach, would you say it would be better for them to play competitive football in the second division as opposed to be in the reserve team and play second division matches? But those matches doesn't really have a lot of value other than game time if you're playing as a ISL club in the second division.
So I think in an ideal situation, a couple of things would happen. One is if the leagues were running concurrently, where you could come out in a transfer window and say, listen, for the first half of the season, I'll go on loan, get some game time, come back. If I impress, then, or if there's an injury crisis, I come back to my parent club. That would be the ideal kind of scenario, rather than where you don't want to take that risk as a player now because you don't know when the second division is going to start or how many games you'll get. You'd rather take the security of the ISL contract and say, listen, let me fight for my place. You might end up having to play in a different position, which happens to a lot of the players when they move there. And the other thing I'd like to see is if you had a rule, let's say, in the second division where there were no foreign players allowed and there was an age cut off in a positive way, you could say you have to have, let's say, 5 under-23 players or some kind of rule, then you'd really see probably ISL teams and other teams who got a lot of players on their books volunteering to give their players out on loan to get them game time because they know they'll play in their preferred position. You can basically see whether the striker can do it if he can score goals. Whereas, you know, now, you know, as an earlier part of our conversation, we're talking about whether you have a Willis Plaza on your team or a Philip Aja. It'd be good to see if none of these teams were allowed to have any foreign players, because you have to say none to any position, rather than doing it positionally, you'd have to say no foreign players. Then we could maybe see some, you'd watch the second division with a lot more interest and think, hey, look, some good Indian strikers are coming through or some good Indian centre backs. But that's, you know, something for AIFF to make that decision.
So we spoke about Mohammedan, Garhwal, Bhavanipur, FCBU. What did you make of Ara, who came into this in the first phase was quite good of the second division? They were quite good, but could not replicate it in this tournament.
No, I think they looked a bit underprepared in terms of, if you look at the first game, the way they had the advantage of sitting back and watching all the other teams. And then when they did play, they lost 4-1. I think that just knocked the stuffing out of them and changed their whole mindset. And it was almost damage limitation then. And it could be because it may be very difficult in Gujarat to have got any decent opposition to play against in the build-up to it. So they were underprepared in that respect. It just seemed like a squad that didn't have enough in a lot of departments. They were just short on quality compared to some of the other teams. And I think that lack of match practice, lack of preparation definitely showed. And then they just weren't up to the pace as the other teams.
So this is something that I wanted to check from a coach's perspective. And I had spoken to AIFF and what they were doing with the bubble and things of that nature. How difficult? So I saw the Tottenham's all or nothing the other day. And
yep.
Let's be honest, they were not it was not really all or nothing for them, right? It was like fourth or fifth or sixth. So we have like, forget that. I don't know why I said that. But anyway, the point was, you see Son or all those players training week in, week in, week in, week in, just for the sake of playing in front of the fans and to have the competitive thing. And anyway, they were always in a bubble of sorts. So now when you're coming into this where the bubble is further stringent and you can't have fans, how difficult is it going to be for the players mentally? Because my head is gone and I'm not even anywhere close to that stress level.
Yeah, I think, see, the kind of bubbles that the players abroad are in is a little bit different, because I think they go to training and that's a bubble, and then they go home to their respective homes and they're expected to not obviously go out and break certain protocols, and they're getting tested relatively regularly, pretty regularly at the top divisions. Now, what's going to happen here was a pretty severe bubble where the entire teams are being sequestered into sort of hotel rooms, and you're away from everything, which I think makes it a little bit more tricky. I mean, the second division was a short season and you could probably get through it. In terms of fans, I don't think it really affects the players that much, because a lot of times the way the second division's played, where it's scheduled, I mean, I've played games in random places like Singrauli in Madhya Pradesh, where bizarrely you'd actually get sellout stadiums. And then, you know, I've played in Shillong where you've had packed stadiums. And then the same thing, I've seen matches where it was played in other parts at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was pretty much empty in an empty stadium. So from a player's point of view, I don't think the fans as such would affect and make a big difference, because I don't think, you know, the likes of Garhwal and RIFC are used to playing in front of hundreds of fans. And it wouldn't make a difference as significantly, I think, for those teams. Maybe, you know, if it was Calcutta and there wasn't a COVID bubble, Mohammedan might have been in a lot of trouble after that first 85 minutes of their first game. So it might have helped them in that regard. So I think it has some impact, but definitely, I mean, the mental aspect of it, you're looking at players being locked away in hotel rooms, away from families, and if you pick up an injury during that time and you can't come out of it, etc. It must have been definitely tough, and I've spoken to some of the coaches and players, and you know, they couldn't wait to get out of there as soon as the tournament was over. So certainly not something that you want to be doing as a sports person, but it is. There's no option at the moment. I mean, the ISL is going to be significantly longer bubble than the second division, and the I League is going to be a longish bubble as well. So, but it's what you have to do in these times now.
Yeah, it's going to be I feel it's going to be a very strange season. In that, I really don't know how the preseason is going to happen and all that has happened. I League or ISL, whatever it's going to be, how good these teams will have trained, where they're mentally, where they'll be. Like you said, an injury and then you fester over it in the hotel room. You can't go and meet your wife, your friend, or whatever.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look at even in the top leagues, I mean, some of the numbers in the first few weeks of the Premier League in terms of goals scored, obviously if there's that many goals scored, you start looking at that many defensive mistakes, and it's not like the strikers have suddenly become significantly better over the lockdown. but it definitely is having an effect. So if it's happening at that top level, it'll certainly be interesting to see what happens, you know, in our leagues, where I think the rule book goes out of the window, the home advantage goes out the window. You might see some random and crazy scores between teams, but I think that's just all part of the new excitement.
Yeah, and you will be part of that too, right? You're also going to be there for the duration of the tournament.
Yep, I mean, the only advantage we have in terms of doing the TV work is that we don't have to have a preseason. So it's one less month of being stuck in the hotel, or six less weeks. But you know, it's still going to be tough. Yeah.
Yeah. So before we end, I just want to ask you this thing. Like, for the first time, I'm seeing a lot of excitement over transfers to India, and in Twitter. And thanks to Marcus for it. I mean, 95% of it is thanks to Marcus. There are a few others as well, but this floor over who's coming, who's not coming, who's moving where. How does it make you feel as a coach and someone who has been involved in Indian football for a long time to see such kind of a response? Like, some of it I don't understand because a lot of these foreign players I don't know. So, like, when I can't get excited about someone I don't know. But at the same time, you see this reaction from the fans. Does it make you feel like, okay, we are finally moving forward slowly but surely?
No, I think it's definitely great to see. There's a lot more, and you know, credit to Marcus. Absolutely, there's you know, I don't know how he does it, and you know, with your phone buzzing
not enough hours in the day.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's good to see young fans being so interactive about it. Maybe it's another side effect of the pandemic. Everyone's stuck at home and, you know, glued to your, whether it's your laptop or your phone or whatever device that's giving you this information, you want to know. So people are maybe doing a bit more research when they hear rumors about this player's signing from Australia, this player's coming. So you do a little checks and everyone has a little bit more knowledge about it. But yeah, we've done it in the past couple of seasons, you and I and a couple of other people, where you start previewing the season. And it's common in most of the top leagues. You see preview shows on TV and everywhere that you read, you buy a magazine, it'll show you who the new signings are. And the fact that we're getting there is partly because I think teams are keeping hold of their core of their team together. We don't have a draft every couple of seasons. We don't have so much turnover of the core of the team. And then it's a few new players coming here and there. And, you know, there's a little horse trading happening as well, where players are being poached from other teams and coaches are being lured from one club to another club, and they're taking players with them. You know, like obviously, Owen Coyle's gone to Jamshedpur, Valskis has gone there.
Entire Sigoa team has gone to.
Yeah, exactly. So that actually adds a little bit of interest, and then because the rivalry then intensifies as well. And I'm sure Kerala Blasters fans this year will be very buoyant, as they always are at this point of the season, thinking that, you know, they've got a great squad. But at the moment, like it always is, everything's on paper. So for the same fans who are cheering that, you know, this player has been signed from this A-League team and that player has been signed from that A-League team, once the games start, that's when we'll really know how good anyone it is. Or, you know, they're obviously good players, but how they adjust to playing not only in India but inside of a bubble of sorts, and how that affects both the coaches, players and everyone else. So it makes it interesting, because I don't think there's going to be that much movement after the season starts because we're in a bubble. I don't think new players are going to be coming in as easily if there's a whole quarantine, etc. So that's why I think maybe it's even more interesting to see who's got what at the start of the season, because there's not going to be that many changes. And the new rules mean you can't bring your reserve players in into the squad. So I don't think there's going to be significant changes into the squads between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, this will be interesting. And anyway, it's an A-League light that we are going to be playing in India this year. So yeah, that's also going to be interesting. And yeah, I'll reach out to you again to see if we can preview the ISL as we have previously as well.
Yeah, we'll just wait till the squads come out and then we can do that, yeah.
Yeah, we're just looking around and seeing, okay, I think there are still a couple more players yet to come to different teams. Anyway, thank you so much for your time.
No problem.
And we'll speak again soon.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be great to do this face to face and sit in, you know, one coffee shop or something.
Coffee shop, yeah.
It's just a crazy time that we live in. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's all in this episode of Injury Time. We will be back with more episodes as the season progresses with our usual analysis pieces and interviews. We will do what we can considering the situation with the pandemic and the limited access we will be getting for the players and coaches for interviews. To keep update with whatever we are up to, you can follow us at Injury Time on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. You can follow me at Sandy Nonem on Twitter. We will be back with more episodes, and until then, stay safe and enjoy the game.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.